turn one soul ring.
Record.
Perfect. Okay. It's a record recording.
Sure. That's right.
Just making sure. Okay, hello everyone and welcome to the show. This is Turn One Soul Ring. I'm Kevin.
I'm Riley.
And I'm Ainsley.
And today on the show, we're concluding our series explaining the events depicted in the Magic the Gathering novel, The Thran.
Wrapping it up.
That's right. Last time we covered Yawgmoth's rise to absolute power over Halcyon, as well as the newly discovered Phyrexia. We also covered the mysterious non-human delegation that arrived in Halcyon in an attempt to make Yawgmoth answer for atrocities committed while in exile.
Mm.
That led to the Thran-Phyrexian War, and is exactly where we're picking things up today. So, while the Alliance and Yawgmoth's forces were preparing for the next stage of the war, Glaceon, Rebek, and a slew of goblins remained in the quarantine caves. Despite the removal of the Power Stone Shard, Glaceon's condition had not improved. He was still coherent enough to offer an escape plan to his wife, though. Sorry, I was just taking
a sip
it was
a pause for a line. I don't think it is. I don't think so.
He reminded her of his discovery regarding artificial planes found in charged power stones and suggested she gather any Thran that would follow her and escape to one of them, with Dyfed's assistance, I assume. He doesn't specifically say that, but how else is she going to do it?
Yeah.
Barring that, he told her she could use the Thran Temple to fly away. She'd have to create a control stone, like the ones used for the stand chairs, and integrate it into the temple, then escape with as many Thran as she could gather. But she was like,
"Our people will survive. Yawgmoth will win this war. Even if he doesn't, there is Phyrexia."
Sorry, dogs are barking. Can you guys hear that? The dogs barking?
No, that also could mean your feet hurt.
My dogs are barking.
Or you say, "I can't wait to bust my dogs out in these new kicks."
Yeah, there you go.
So sad.
Kevin does.
I do actually say that. I do say my dogs are barking.
Oh, God. I've been your partner for like 9 years. I've never heard you say that.
Well, I say it's a professional thing. It's one of my professionalisms.
Oh, you say it at work. Oh, yeah. I see. Okay, go ahead.
All right. No. Whoever goes there is changed, is destroyed. You can save the rest. You can take them away in the temple. You know it can be done. You know it must be done.
I know it can be done.
Don't tell Yawgmoth.
No.
Don't let him plant one of his stones in you.
No.
No.
No. No, it is funny. The dialogue is funny.
It is so... Who would do that? Like,
yeah, that's why I put this one in.
Don't tell Yawgmoth. Sorry. No. Don't let him plant a stone. Oh, no, oh, no, 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 no.
Don't let him inside you.
No, 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 no.
Promise me you'll do it. Promise me you'll make the control stone. Promise me you'll take our people away from here.
No, I have to go. There's a battle being fought. Ah.
Yes, go, Rebek. Leave me, but save them. Save them.
Save them! Then she went topside to find Yawgmoth, who was leading the defense of Halcyon. He'd been correct. On the first few days of the battle, Alliance forces advanced nowhere near the city itself. The battle took place only in the desert and the sky above. But having superior numbers, mostly in the form of artifact warriors, the Alliance eventually made its way to the city walls to lay siege. So that's when Yawgmoth, controlling his forces from a floating sedan chair above the city, released his Phyrexian army, led by Commander Gix. I don't know if we mentioned it last episode, but he's been promoted to Commander.
Oh,
good,
nice.
For you.
Moving up in the world.
Yeah.
Gixy.
The formerly Thysis-stricken Thran had been transformed into killing machines. They were more than a match for the combined forces of the Thran Alliance, and over the next day, the Defile became a meat grinder.
Oof.
Eventually, though, the battle reached a stalemate that was only broken by Yawgmoth's manipulation of the Null Sphere. So we mentioned the Null Sphere back in our Planeswalker series, but just as a refresher, it was a giant spherical broadcasting station nestled in an impact crater. Glaceon had designed and built it to control all the artifacts across the Empire.
Cool.
And actually, last time we talked about it, they actually call it the Null Moon, not the Null Sphere. But anyways, it did this by drawing mana from Dominaria and channeling it into artifacts. The station was located outside of Halcyon and was as yet neutral in the war. Yawgmoth changed that by infiltrating it with a score of Phyrexians and Halcyte guards. He ordered the artificers inside to turn the Alliance's artifact soldiers against them, and at first they refused. But after a few summary executions, they relented and turned over control of the sphere to Yawgmoth. His men placed implosion devices on the pylons anchoring the station to the crater, and when he was ready, Yawgmoth detonated them, and the sphere lifted into the air. As the station moved over the battlefield, the artificers turned the Alliance's artifact soldiers against them, and Yawgmoth reveled in the massacre. He's like, oh, I did good.
I reveled.
Or he has like a revel, you know, like the ice cream tree.
One? Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, those are good.
It wasn't enough, though, as the Alliance forces that weren't killed by artifact soldiers retreated into the desert. Yawgmoth launched a stone charger from the Null Sphere. It landed on the retreating army and detonated. It released a white cloud as it absorbed the mana energy of everything in its blast radius that vaporized everything it touched. Yawgmoth ordered the Null Sphere to climb as the cloud spread, and as it did, he ordered the sphere's mana pumps to draw mana from the cloud before it spread too far. One of the artificers asked,
Is this a new character? It's like, it's not one I've done.
No.
Yet.
No.
Okay. I'm trying to focus. Okay.
What shall we do with that much raw power? It will overload the mana batteries.
It's raw.
Send it out. Send it to every Thran artifact engine in the Empire. Shut them down.
Lives will be lost. Thousands of innocent civilians who rely on artifact engines, miners and loggers, and fishers.
Do it, and be glad I do not ask you to turn those machines against their owners.
Yawgmoth's mood seemed to soften.
It's only temporary. Only until the Thran Alliance sues for peace and recognizes me as the true Emperor. Then all of the devices will be reactivated. Then I will have much greater use for this mana.
Think about all the fishing.
That's so much fishing. Yeah. That's good. This is a good bit.
He planned to rig a channel by which mana power could be shunted from Dominaria directly into Phyrexia. There would undoubtedly be more killing clouds, and he planned to use their mana energy for his paradise. At this point, he thought the Thran Alliance army was finished and his victory assured, but something on the horizon drew that same artificer's attention, and he said,
Forgive my interruption, Lord Yawgmoth, but I have grave news.
What is it?
Our new altitude has given us greater range for visual scan. I've just now picked them up, perhaps 100 miles out, approaching from the west.
Picked what up?
2 more fleets of Thran ships, 2 more invading armies.
This artificer is dramatic.
Yeah, I hope this isn't exacerbating your cough.
Not at all.
Okay. Because you're like,
No, I'm not. It's cool. I've done vocal work throughout my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to pree.
It would probably work with this character, though. Like, forgive me. Yeah.
So, Yawgmoth wasn't going to sweat it because, say what you will about him, he believed in his cause and, more importantly, in himself. He also believed his empire could stop the approaching armies, but he would need more Phyrexians, which is really a great way to solve any problem. So he gave a rousing speech to the civilians of Halcyon, telling them that to defend their homes, they had to fight with the vengeful joy that came from righteousness, the kind his Phyrexian minions fought with. He asked any and all who were willing to travel into the quarantine caves and into Phyrexia to be perfected, to be transformed into weapons to fight their enemies. And you know what? Most of them did.
Well, I bet it was a very arousing speech.
It probably was quite erotic, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, he is Thran Daddy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's hot Yawgmoth Daddy.
And so, like, it's kind of hard to believe that rational people would do that after seeing Yawgmoth's Phyrexian warriors. But we have to remember that by this point, he'd been in control of Halcyon for almost a decade and had created an atmosphere of fear around a citizen's personal safety, not unlike our current situation.
There's a lot of parallels between this book and, like, our current life right now. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, there was a plague, and now there's a war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. A little too real.
Yeah, but a little less interconnected. Yeah, yeah, that's...
yeah, and no sexy goth daddy leader, unfortunately.
No, Putin's not very good looking.
Yeah, maybe not a... maybe not a...
The president of Ukraine is a much more attractive man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking of Zelensky. Zelensky's kind of like a, not a Yog Daddy vibe, but definitely a daddy vibe.
Oh,
yeah. Definitely. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I can see him behind a grill with a couple, with a pair of New Balances on. Oh, for sure.
Pulling his belt off.
Yeah.
He's like, my dogs are barking.
So, anyways, when you create an environment like that, people will do almost anything to feel safe. And that's the thing too about the pandemic, right? Like, I don't think we were ever that much less safe during it than we were before it, and we will be, you know, after it, these end stages. But now there's this idea that we're so much less safe because we had that, we felt like we had that huge risk that really wasn't, for most of us, a big risk. So it's just kind of odd,
the psychological part of it.
Yeah, because people still get behind the wheel of their car, or
Yeah, you're way more likely to die in a car accident, like driving to work.
Just think about stairs, like taking stairs, falling down stairs.
Or living alone, like choking on something, like you're dead. Like,
So, I don't know. It's just kind of...
If I lived alone, actually, I should probably set this up anyway. I've thought about this. You should have a spot in your house or like a chair that's really stable so that if you're choking, you can run to it and kind of give yourself the Heimlich.
Yeah.
That would be a good market, as seen on TV.
A chair?
Chair. That'd be good. Heimlich chair. It's a Heimlich chair.
Because then it would double, double as a chair.
But it's also a chair. Yeah.
You don't just want a Heimlich machine. But And then when you live with people, what you should do when you're choking is go into the bathroom and lock the door so you don't upset anyone.
So you can die alone.
Because it's kind of disruptive to be choking, you know?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
We need to get a Heimlich.
Keep it in the bathroom.
I like toilet.
So, Rebek watched all this suspended high above the city in the Thran Temple, and after hours of seeing Halcyte citizens scurry into the quarantine caves, Yawgmoth found her.
You need to come down. It will not be safe for you up here when the siege begins.
Rebek turned and looked up at him. He was magnificent, dark and battle-scarred in the scintillating light of dusk.
Oh, meow. It has never been safe. Oh. Only now I recognize the peril. Look at the people we've killed. We can't even look at them. They're gone, wiped from the world.
You didn't kill anyone.
I'm implicated in all of this. The city I've built, the husband I've helped invent weapon after weapon, the man I've guided to the pinnacle of Halcyon.
Yawgmoth began to laugh at her.
This is so like sexy abusive boyfriend vibes, like gaslighting her and shit.
Oh yeah.
So hot.
She gave herself far too much credit. Glaceon would have made weapons without her just as Yawgmoth would have ascended Halcyon. Despite this, Yawgmoth still did not tell her the whole truth about what he had planned for Dominaria. Instead, he scooped her up in his arms and carried her home to wait out the Thran Alliance's attack. He is taller than most Thran. Don't forget that. At that point, there was nothing to do but wait. So Yawgmoth traveled back to Phyrexia to get some work done. You know, he doesn't... idle hands.
Back to work!
He's like, man, I've been working so hard, my dogs are barking. Actually, in Phyrexia, he could probably graft actual dogs onto somebody's ankles, like cut their feet off and then put dogs on there, and then they would literally be barking.
Well, in the first part, didn't he get his feet, like, scrubbed off completely by Rebek? Didn't she, like...
Yeah, and then I think she sucked on them.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. That. And cut his, like, long desert toenails. Yeah.
No, she scrubbed them right off. She scrubbed his toenails right off.
Yeah.
convenient.
Yeah. You wouldn't have to cut them anymore. That would be nice.
Yeah, man.
What a pain that is. So Phyrexia was starting, by this point, Phyrexia was starting to resemble the Phyrexia that many of us are familiar with. And it was on the fourth sphere, while Yawgmoth was overseeing the Vat Priest's exacting work when Dyfed found him. She had been doing a little investigating and discovered the man she'd guided to godhood was a monster. Turns out the Thysis was never contagious.
Oh, shit.
It was caused by Power Stone radiation, but Yawgmoth had quickly figured out how to infect a healthy body with it, ensuring he could quarantine his enemies and promote his allies.
Hmm.
Dyfed called what Yawgmoth was doing to the Halcyites in Phyrexia, just another one of his atrocities, and she revealed she'd saved the Elder Council members he'd imprisoned from such a fate. He was furious when he learned she'd taken them to another plane, but as a way to taunt her, he took her to see what had become of the non-human ambassadors he'd imprisoned at the start of the war. The two walked past the Vat Priests, who were no longer exactly human. Red-robed, masked in black, they were impossibly tall and lean. Yawgmoth had transformed their flesh just as he had the beings in the vats that surrounded them. Each vat illuminated from below and filled with golden oil and a single, not-so-human form. Further on were the vats containing the ambassadors. They hadn't been transformed slowly like the others. To Dyfed's horror, they had been cut up and sewn back together brutally and mercilessly. Shocked, she said,
"I cannot heal these. These, I never thought..."
"Precisely."
Then he drove a dagger into the planeswalker's forehead, one hand clutching her hair, holding her upright. The other gripped the dagger's hilt, waggling it back and forth to scramble her brains.
Jesus.
Yeah. And I'm like, throughout this series, I've given detail, but again, if you really want to get grossed out by these, like, details, read the book, because it is way worse.
It's gross, yeah.
Like, if you thought the foot washing was bad, this part... ugh, gross. So he signaled to the priests, who surrounded him while he cradled Dyfed against himself and continued to work the knife back and forth against the sides of her skull, causing a red-gray ooze to trickle down her nose. Then he kissed her on the mouth. Presumably, like, also getting, like, the ooze on his face. Good thing he doesn't have facial hair.
Man, he's into some weird shit.
Yeah, he's a weird guy. All right, this is you, Riley.
"You see, my dear... the brain is the seat of thought. Every human faculty has its organ. Remove that organ, and you remove that faculty. Even planeswalking. There is an organ in you, my dear, that makes that a possibility. I am going to cut you open and find it and remove it from you and graft it into me. I am going to be a planeswalker, and you will be just another hunk of meat in the vats."
It's a pretty sick line.
Wow.
Hunk of meat in the vats. I like it.
Yeah.
It's horrible what he did, but...
if only he used his powers for good, but we wouldn't have much of a story, would we?
Well, he thinks he's doing good.
Most villains do.
Yeah. Well, they have to, you know.
Yeah. Just a means to an end.
That's right. Yeah, just another hunk of meat for the vats.
Oh, goodness.
Exactly.
So she wasn't dead, though. He'd learned quite a bit from his unfettered experiments since he'd taken control of Phyrexia. One thing was how to keep a subject alive while he dissected them, which is exactly what he did to Dyfed in his fervent search for her planeswalker organ.
Silly goose.
She already explained it to you, bud. It's the seed of greatness. So, all that took place over a series of hours, and by that point, the Thran Alliance army had arrived on the outskirts of Halcyon, and they were mad. What would they say to not make them mad?
Sorry?
Your dogs are barking? So, don't be bad.
So, Yawgmoth was ready for them. After traveling back to Halcyon, he boarded his flagship, named Yadagon, for reasons unknown to the reader, and led a fleet of other ships against the Alliance fleet while his Halcyite guard and Phyrexian warriors dealt with the Alliance ground forces. Things didn't go as well for Yawgmoth this time around, and his flagship was accidentally shot down by an overzealous Halcyte rail gunner defending the city. The ship crashed in the desert, and out of 100 other crew, Yawgmoth was the only survivor. That was because, although he still appeared quite human, he had been perfecting himself the same way he'd been perfecting his Phyrexians. Not teeth and claws, but stronger bones, quicker reflexes, and sharper intellect. So once he regained his composure, he studied the desert landscape. It was littered with bodies from both armies. He was just south of Halcyon, and he noticed a group of Alliance soldiers heading for the city. He assumed, correctly, that they would be climbing from the base of the extrusion that led to Halcyon. So he stripped the body of a Thran soldier of his cloak and scurried to accompany them. And you know what? They were none the wiser. They accepted him as one of their own, and they climbed up the steep cliff face that led to Halcyon. Yawgmoth caused several accidents that resulted in Alliance soldiers falling to their deaths. Getting wise to what was happening, the soldiers turned on the imposter, but fortunately for Yawgmoth, that's when a cadre of Phyrexian steeplejacks arrived, bounding down the cliff face as if they were running on level ground. Another one of Yawgmoth's creations, a steeplejack was vaguely human with the elongated limbs of a sloth and the speed of a horse.
Oh. Which is ironic. Fat sloth.
They had extendable claws.
Sorry, it's just like the image of a sloth as fast as a horse is kind of funny.
Yeah. So they had extendable claws that sunk into the merest outcropping of rock. The upper part of their faces were the most human-looking part, with the lower part stretched wide to accommodate what seemed to be a living bear trap grafted into a human head. This alteration allowed them to efficiently bite off their victim's head. Which is exactly what they did to the Alliance soldiers surrounding Yawgmoth. It happened so quickly, he barely had time to revel in the violence. When only Yawgmoth and his creations were left on the cliff face, one of the steeplejacks approached him, bowed its head, and Yawgmoth said, well, that rhymes.
Do you think you could carry me to the city?
The creature nodded, scooped Yawgmoth into one of his arms, and bounded up the cliff face to the city. Yawgmoth watched the steeplejack as he climbed and began to smile. He recognized him.
I know you. You are one of the first Health Corp workers. Zod, yes, your name was Zod.
A look of pride shone in the steeplejack's eyes.
Yes, Lord Yawgmoth, yes.
You look different. You look beautiful.
And then they kissed.
Aww.
No, they did they really?
No.
I wish.
I wish.
Is Zod a male or a female?
He's a guy.
Oh, okay, cool. Oh, so Yawgmoth Daddy's bisexual.
No, they didn't really kiss.
I think he's just admiring his creation.
Yeah, he thinks all Phyrexians are beautiful. You know
what? It's cool, you know? I think love who you will.
Yeah,
as long as they're consenting.
Yeah, as long as, and you know, it's not committing a crime.
Sure.
So it wasn't long before Zod ferried Yawgmoth to the top of the city wall, and Yawgmoth ordered Zod to go back down and bite off more heads. Rebecca watched all this happen from the city with her cadre of goblins. They were searching Glacian's power stone reserves for a control stone that would synergize with the Thran Temple so they could fly a bunch of people away from Halcyon. She was horrified by what she saw, and finally she resolved not only to implement Glacian's escape plan, but she would also do everything she could to stop Yawgmoth in the meantime. I feel like she's done this before. Speaking of Yawgmoth, he'd found the rail gunner who'd shot down his flagship, and accident or not, he tore her eyes out in front of his people. To silence her screaming, he threw her off the wall, and with any luck, a steeplejack would bite her head off before she hit the ground. That part is really gross in the book. That's when Commander Gix showed up with his Phyrexian guard. He'd been on his way to search the wreckage of Yawgmoth's flagship when he found him. Yawgmoth explained what he'd been through, and Gix briefed his leader on the state of the siege. Basically, they were holding off the Alliance attack. For how long, Gix couldn't say. So Yawgmoth ordered Gix to use the Halcyte and Phyrexian Guard to round up any Thran citizen that wasn't actively involved in the defense of the city and take them to Phyrexia. Gix abided, but he said the task would take weeks. Then Yawgmoth headed to the quarantine caves. To Phyrexia. Huh? By that point, Rebecca had gathered quite a few refugees for her escape plan. She sent them to the temple to wait for her while she went to the quarantine caves to retrieve Glaceon. But she arrived too late. Glaceon was already dead. R.I.P.
No.
Yeah, he died. Well, that's what sick people do.
Sad.
No, yeah, they just up and die.
Well, he was really sick. Yeah. When you're that sick.
He was pretty sick.
She's okay. It's Bub that's the bad one.
Hi, Boopy. You're so fluffy.
So, he'd fallen into a coma, like so many times before, but this time, he didn't wake up.
He's like, I've fallen and I can't get up.
My legs don't work. That was like me last weekend. I hurt my back, but it's not like I fell or anything. I think it was like from shoveling and just overuse. And I couldn't get out of bed. Like I couldn't move without like horrible pain.
He sounded like he was in labor.
It was the worst. Yeah. I was like crying.
Yeah. That sucks.
Yeah.
We made some I've fallen, I can't get up jokes. That's why he mentioned it. Yeah.
So Rebecca spoke to Glaceon as she caressed his corpse.
You were right about him, about everything. He deceived everyone but you. Deceived and seduced us all, except you.
Yeah, she got seduced big time.
Oh yeah, how could you not?
That's when she noticed a strange bulge beneath Glaceon's infirmary garment.
Stop it.
An erection. No, the rigor mortis had set in.
No.
No, no. It was it was the cut Yawgmoth had made when he removed the Power Stone shard. It had never fully healed, and now the flesh looked dark and desiccated. That's where the bulge was, everybody. It wasn't an erection. Yawgmoth, without Rebecca's knowledge, had implanted a Phyrexian heart stone into Glaceon when he'd removed the Power Stone shard, and it probably was a factor in the man's death. But it was a double-edged sword. Just like all sentient creatures implanted with heart stones, part of Glaceon's consciousness imprinted itself into the stone, meaning that he wasn't truly dead. Yawgmoth and Rebecca had no knowledge of that interaction yet, and we'll get back to that in a bit, because it was at that point that Yawgmoth arrived in the quarantine caves. Rebecca explained that Glaceon was dead, and Yawgmoth promised to take them both to Phyrexia to heal Glaceon, which was the one thing Glaceon wouldn't have wanted. So Rebecca protested, but Yawgmoth was already embracing her and trying to make her see reason. And he also had a bulge. So as Yawgmoth gripped on her, she noticed a strange ring on his finger. When he touched her arm, she felt a jab, like a bee sting. Which sucks. Have you guys ever been stung by a bee?
God, it hurts.
Yeah, it does suck. One time I sat on a haystack, and there was a bee in the hay, and it stung me on my ass, and it fucking hurt.
Oh my God.
Oh, Riley living in the country.
This was back at my Auntie Sue's farm, but like this was city boy Riley.
That sucks.
Yeah, this never would have happened to country boy Riley. Now he knows about the bees.
He's not smart. Yeah. He knows now I don't keep hay.
Get that hay away from me.
I don't keep hay.
Oh my God, that's funny.
Oh, poor you.
So, Rebecca began to lose consciousness as Yawgmoth held her, and healthcore workers surrounded Glaceon's healing capsule. Their captive secured, Yawgmoth and his healthcore workers traveled to Phyrexia, and Rebecca couldn't imagine a greater bliss. Then she passed out in his arms. Drugs will do that, hey? They make you feel great.
Drugs are great.
From the drugs, of course.
That's our editorial stance.
In her heart of hearts, she had still resolved to escape with the refugees, though. After arriving in Phyrexia, Yawgmoth sent Glaceon's body to the same lab Dyfed was kept in. Then he took Rebecca to the ninth sphere and entered her, but not with his penis.
Oh my God.
What followed was a dreamlike state where Yawgmoth explored almost every facet of her mind. He discovered her escape plan, and more importantly, he discovered that she had never loved him. In fact, she had hated him since the first time he'd cut skin samples from her husband a decade earlier. And that hatred had only grown with each cruel act she witnessed. Just taking a sip of coffee.
I mean, there's a fine line between love and hate.
I think they made a movie about that.
I bet they have.
So the old Yawgmoth would have been devastated by that realization, but the god of Phyrexia had evolved beyond such pedestrian desires. He didn't need Rebecca to love him as an equal. He planned to perfect her, and once he did, she would be as loyal to him as any other Phyrexian.
So that was, like, I had made the prediction that he was going to be bummed that she didn't love him.
Right.
But it sounds like he's pretending he's not bummed. It's like, doesn't matter, I'm gonna make her perfect anyway, and yeah, then she'll really love me, so it yeah, doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
So I was like half right.
Yeah.
Let the record show. Let the record reflect.
So Yawgmoth suddenly transported her to the second sphere to show her the artifact army he'd built to push back the Alliance. Then he explained that Phyrexia was large enough to hold all the citizens of the Empire, and by that point, he'd issued an ultimatum to the Alliance leaders. Surrender, unconditionally, and they would be invited to live in Phyrexia. If they rebuffed his offer, Yawgmoth would drop a stone charger on each of the other city-states, erasing them from Dominaria. And in the days since the first stone charger's detonation, 9 more had been fabricated and were ready for use. 7 for the city-states and 2 for discretionary use. It's
good to have access. You never know.
Yeah. Rebecca was horrified, and if that wasn't enough, he transported her to the fourth sphere, to the lab where Difed was. The room was polished metal, and the only color came from the red robes of the 4 vat priests that tended to the planeswalker. She was laid open on an operating table. A long, clean slice ran from the central finger of her left arm, down the palm, across the wrist, along the length of the arm, over the shoulder, across the torso to the right hip, and down to the central toe. All along the cut mark, skin had been carefully flayed back and pinned. Beneath, muscles had been parsed, fatty layers picked apart, tendons cleft and clamped, bones sawn in two. Whenever an organ was revealed, the ports into and out of it had been mapped with numbered pins that pulsed with the movement of fluids, and careful cuts had cloven the trembling outer sacs and laid open the warm centers. Like a poached egg.
Oh, good God.
Just like a poached egg.
The movement of fluids.
I don't have an appetite for poached eggs at the moment.
That was visceral. Yep.
Still, the woman lived. Yawgmoth assured Rebecca that she couldn't feel pain or terror, not after what he'd done to her brain. He explained what the priests were doing, but wouldn't you know it, they still hadn't found the fabled planeswalker organ. He also explained that once he'd found the organ, he would recreate it and implant it into all Phyrexians, a race of planeswalkers that could conquer the multiverse, starting with Dominaria. Rebecca tried to run, tried to escape, but Yawgmoth grabbed her, and she was enveloped by his robes. He transported her back to the ninth sphere and let her sleep. And like I said, it was all a dream.
What?
Yeah, I said it was like a dream state.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, like the whole story. I thought you were like joking.
The whole
like,
story's been a dream.
This was, yeah. And then she woke up. The end.
And Riley's a figment of your imagination. Everything he says is pre-recorded by me.
Oh my God. How there you do go. You do that?
Sounds about right.
So that being said, everything that I just mentioned about the stone chargers and Difed did actually happen, but it sort of seems like in the book, the same way Yawgmoth had infiltrated Rebecca's mind, she had also been able to invade his mind and look at his past memories, but it's not abundantly clear. Exploring every facet of Rebecca's being took about a day, and by that point, Yawgmoth had received the Alliance's answer. They had breached Halcyon's walls, slain all the steeplejacks, and slaughtered the Halcyte soldiers on the wall, so R.I.P. Zod.
Oh
yeah, steeplejack boy.
He just come back and now he's gone.
Yeah,
he was a beautiful boy.
Beautiful, yeah. Sloth boy.
Beautiful sloth boy. That's right. Beautiful fast sloth.
It is funny to think about a sloth.
A
like,
slorse.
Oh, yeah. The fighting had spilled into the streets, and that's when Yawgmoth ordered the stone chargers transported to Dominaria. He followed them with Gix and a contingent of Phyrexian guards, leaving Rebek in the Ninth Sphere to wait for his return. By the time Yawgmoth, the Stone Chargers, and his Phyrexians reached Halcyon's fifth aerial port, it was overrun with Alliance forces. Wrath and Vengeance, Yawgmoth's last two personal airships, had been captured by a crew of Minotaurs. Most were piling bodies neatly on the dock, while others prepared the airships for flight. Yawgmoth drew his sword and ordered the bomb crews to wait on the stairs leading up to the dock until the ships were secure. Then he bounded into the open view of the Minotaurs, followed by 10 Phyrexians. They made quick work of the bullmen, loaded their bombs into the ships, and headed for their first target, the Alliance encampment in Magadan Defile. It wasn't just two airships. Those were just Yawgmoth's personal airships. They did have other airships with them. What were you going
to
say?
Oh, I was going to say that, like, you know, they're like on their little airship, and they're like, word to your moms, we came to drop bombs.
So by that point, there were no Alliance ships in the sky. Yawgmoth and his flotilla of 9 Phyrexian airships, Vengeance loaded with 1 stone charger, and Wrath carrying the other 8, were unencumbered from raining white death from above.
Remember that movie with John Travolta called I Am Wrath?
No.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Oh my god, yeah. Rouse. If you want to watch a movie that's like a terrible movie, but it's like fun because it's so bad, I Am Wrath.
It's kind of like a dollar store John Wick with John Travolta.
And like trying to be gritty, but not.
And his wig looks really bad in it too. It's so fun. Really bad wig.
He literally says the title of the movie at one point. It's excellent.
When he's wronged by criminals and he has to like get back into his killing ways, and yet he says I Am Wrath.
Nice. It reminds me of
every time I hear the word wrath.
I love like Nick Cage B movies.
Also good.
Yeah, there is one I watched with Kyra called Left Behind. I believe that's what it was called. Yeah, it was with Nick Cage. And it was like, I don't know. It was so fucking weird. It all took place on an airplane, and basically the whole premise is like, in a snap, half the people on the planet like disappear. You know, very, very like Avengers Endgame, but like none of the cinematics.
Yeah. go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's just all like, it was like a Judgment Day thing. So it's like anybody who was, you know, pure of heart or like, you know, Christian and white was like saved, but everybody else was left to die.
Die on a plane.
Die on a plane. God. Yeah.
I hope the pilots weren't Christian.
Yeah, no, they were good. They were good. So they were good. They left everybody else behind.
Oh,
fucking bastards.
Isn't there Nick Cage where he's on a plane the whole time?
Con Air.
Yeah. Yes.
That's Con Air's good.
Con Air is actually good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Con Air's got some problems, just like a lot of his movies.
Con Air's great.
But Con Air's like a lot of fun.
It's super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. The insulin shot thing
they
is funny.
They're deeply misinformed about how type 1 diabetes works.
So panic room's the same thing.
Like, what is that? What's going on, Hollywood? Read a book.
Yeah. I don't know. Or pick a different like disease that's more.
That you know and understand. Yeah, good plan.
Okay, so the first stop for Yawgmoth's flotilla was the Alliance encampment. Hundreds of thousands of Thran, Minotaurs, Vaishino, Dwarves, Elves, and Cat women and Cat men were swallowed up by a Stone Charger's white cloud and the Null Sphere not far behind, consuming the Manor energy and sending it down to Phyrexia. With the Thran army vaporized down to the desert bedrock, the flotilla headed back to Halcyon. There were still Alliance soldiers in the streets that needed to die. All of the ships except Wrath, or I Am Wrath, which was ordered to travel to each other city-state and drop a stone charger on each. Yawgmoth had commandeered the Null Sphere, but in truth, he did not control it. It was still being piloted by the only people that could, a group of artificers that had been trained to operate the massive mana funneler. Yawgmoth's Phyrexian minions watched over the artificers as they cruised over the white mana cloud created by the stone charger. The oldest artificer among them ordered the Null Sphere to climb higher to avoid the cloud. The Phyrexians protested, but the artificer commanded that they climb even higher. The other artificers knew what the old man was planning, and they obeyed. Eventually, the Null Sphere lost atmosphere, and the Thran crew died in their chairs, their bodies shorting out the command seats, and the Null Sphere was nullified.
Cute.
It could no longer draw off Yawgmoth's killing cloud that was quickly headed for Halcyon. The Null Sphere kept climbing until it was in orbit around Dominaria. The plane now had two satellites. The next time we'll see it will be when Urza uses it to unmask Yawgmoth's thousands of Phyrexian sleeper agents, several thousand years after these events. So, Yawgmoth took vengeance and to the city's granaries. It had long been a hotbed of rebel activity, and when they arrived, they found all manner of Alliance soldiers. He ordered an anchor dropped from the ship, climbed down it, and began killing the rebels. He ordered Vengeance and the other Phyrexian ships to patrol the city and return to killing. While that was going on, Rebecca had awoken from her Yawgmoth-induced dream state. She was still in the ninth sphere of Phyrexia, and strangely enough, she still had enough Yawgmoth in her for the plane to obey her commands. I guess he didn't use protection. She reached out and asked Phyrexia to take her to the one she loved, and just like that, she was transported to the fourth sphere laboratory, where both Glaceon and Diphed were. Glaceon had just arrived and was being arrayed on the table next to Diphed. The four priests were beginning to work on him, cutting him the same way they'd cut Diphed. Rebecca was suddenly filled with rage, and without realizing it, her control of Phyrexia allowed her to extinguish the lives of the four red-robed priests. Not R.I.P. priests. Along with their deaths, she'd also felt Diphed dying, which she was relieved to feel happening. R.I.P. Diphed, too. She told Phyrexia that Yawgmoth wanted to dissect Glaceon himself, that he was a nascent planeswalker, and the organ Yawgmoth sought was located in his brain. The reason they hadn't found it in Diphed was due to the trauma her brain suffered when Yawgmoth stabbed her. Which, there's no organ, guys. There's no planeswalker organ.
Yeah.
Spoiler
it's
alert.
A spark.
Yeah. That's right. Gotta get that spark, baby. Glaceon was little more than a bag of bones at that point, and Rebecca easily carried him back to the portal, into the quarantine caves, and back to Halcyon. After that, she found a sedan chair and headed for the Thran Temple. The Phyrexians arrived before she did, though. Gix was the first. The temple was packed with over 2,000 refugees, and what ensued was quite similar to the Untouchables' first riot and attack on the temple. At first, the refugees were successful in keeping the Phyrexians at bay, but when they used the control stone to move the temple away from the pinnacle, vengeance arrived. The Phyrexian airship loosed five ropes with five black warriors into the temple, and just before they could climb down, a white cloud enveloped the ship. Yawgmoth, having dealt with the granary, was heading for the temple and watched as his ship was vaporized in the killing cloud. And that's when he realized Halcyon would be consumed. Then he watched as the temple drifted above the cloud and away from the city. 2,000 refugees had escaped, and he didn't know if he would ever get a chance to make them suffer for their treachery. But it turns out that he wouldn't have to, because it wasn't long before the temple came falling from the sky, crashing into the city along with all 2,000 of its passengers. Just like, I remember reading that in the book, and I'm like, what? They're just dead? That's so lame. So Rebecca witnessed most of this and decided her only hope was to travel back into the caves, away from the killing cloud. What followed was chaos as the white cloud descended on the city, turning everything it touched to ash. Anyone still alive had the same idea as Rebecca, and they all scurried into the cave system beneath the city. Unfortunately, most of the tunnels led nowhere safe, and that's when they heard a voice echo through the caves.
People of Halcyon, people of the allied foes, hear me. Even now, a wave of death settles over all we have built. It draws the power from every crystal that held our nation aloft. Towers fall, walls crumble. The dream of Halcyon is over. We have seen the Thran Temple fall. We have seen the walls of our city turn to ash and sift away. This cloud will course down the channels that have brought us here. It will reach even this deep spot and supercharge the 81 crystal spheres here. They will explode with a force that will level the whole extrusion.
A groan of terror rose from the moiling multitude. Fingernails clawed at any crack that might be a doorway.
Oh, my people, how I have longed to bring you to paradise. I have prepared this place for you, my people, even for you, my one-time foes. I have made it for you, for I am a god. I ask only that you enter it. I ask only that I may be your god.
Talk about a god complex.
Woo! He showed them the way, and most of them chose Phyrexia over death. Rebecca and Glaceon weren't far behind, but when they arrived, they were alone in the quarantine caves. Rebecca, exhausted, spoke to her husband's corpse.
It is going to grind us away to nothing.
Referring to the white cloud.
Then we won't be alone anymore.
She drew her hand along his side as she spoke and noticed the bulge beneath Yawgmoth's, incision. She found a medical kit in Glacian's healing capsule and used it to cut into the wound. In it, she found not one, but two charged power stones. Yawgmoth had implanted uncharged power stones in his minions, and the same was true for Glaceon. But like I mentioned earlier, power stones can take on the essence of those close to it. As Rebecca studied the glowing stones, she realized they were two halves of the same stone. She recognized it as the power stone Diphed had used to open the permanent portal to Phyrexia. If Rebecca were to place the stone back on the mirror pedestal, keeping the portal open, Yawgmoth would be trapped forever, and Glaceon seconded that thought, because now he could talk to his wife.
I will be the gatekeeper. You need merely set the crystal on the mirror podium, and the portal will close. I will remain, keeping Yawgmoth and his monstrous nation locked away. He is no planeswalker. He will not escape Phyrexia. His world will become his prison.
Oh, Glaceon, I can't sentence you to that. To an eternity alive and alone in stone.
It will be a long eternity, yes, my dear, but a glad one, knowing Yawgmoth's torment and knowing the world, the multiverse, is safe from him. I was right about him. I was right all along.
Told you so.
I don't mean to say a toad-a-so, but a fucking toad-a-so.
Then she walked toward the podium with the power stone. Yawgmoth was on the other end, aware of what was happening. Rebecca was terrified of him coming through the portal, but Glaceon assured her he would not risk being stuck on Dominaria as a mortal man. And he was right. Rebecca closed the portal despite Yawgmoth's pleas not to, and Rebecca was once again alone. Dominaria would be safe from Yawgmoth until a couple of brothers stumbled across the power stone in the caves of Koilos, 5,000 or so years later. Then Rebecca ascended the long, torturous path out of the darkness and into a cloud of white. And just as a way to wrap things up, Wrath likely made it to the remaining city-states and dropped her payloads because during Urza's lifetime, the whole of the Thran Empire had vanished. And that's the Thran.
Jeez. Wow.
Yep. Rebecca just got vaporized by the white cloud.
Jeepers.
R.I.P.
Rebecca.
That's
pretty crazy.
Yeah. And that's how the Thran Empire fell. So next time we are going to be starting the invasion cycle of novels with the titular novel. So anyone who's been looking forward to getting back with Gerard and Karn and Sisse.
Karn.
No longer.
Ooh, yay.
And yeah, we'll see. In that series, we'll get to see kind of where Yawgmoth ends up after all this. So that should be fun.
Excited.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
That's right. And don't forget to check us out on Instagram at Turn One Soul Ring, the podcast.
The podcast.
It's a podcast. Check it.
You gotta check it out.
It's a podcast.
It's a mandatory requirement from getting to the end of this episode. You now have to check it out.
They're probably not listening.
They probably stopped listening.
Yeah, they're like, oh, it's done.
Next. If you're still listening, we love you.
All right, everybody. Take it easy.
See ya.
Bye now.
Bye.